This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
BFM 89.9, the business station. My name is Rich Bradbury. I'm joined, not in the studio today, by Arif Ruse over there, the man with the news. Say hello, Arif.
Hello, everybody.
And somewhere else is Daniel Fernandez from DSF.my. Say hello, Daniel.
Hello, gentlemen. I hope all of you are feeling wonderful, and I hope both of you have had a little bit of durian in the past week.
I feel personally attacked, but yes. I'm expecting a delivery any moment now, so if you hear my doorbell go, it's that.
Okay, the reason why I'm asking is because everyone is talking about durian in the last 1 week.
Yeah.
And nobody's talking about the virus.
See, the problem is, I mean, if you just think back a few weeks ago, I'm sorry this is a car show, but we've divulged into durian. Yeah. But just a few weeks ago, we were seeing it being piled up at the side of the road. Do you
exactly.
remember that?
Exactly.
And now, they're overcharging for it now. What's going on?
I tell you what's going on. Because the moment MCO was lifted, people could drive interstate. They took their cars, they drove to the farms, they got their durians, they brought it back.
That's true. With that said, though, at least we're not eating tofu. Did you see that in the news the last couple of days?
Oh, that's lovely, isn't it?
Oh, my word. But we should probably talk about some car stuff, shouldn't we? Yes, that's what we're here for. Arif's just like, can you guys just get on with it, please?
I understand we're all pretty hungry, but yeah. Basically, we're just going to start with a few updates from last week's show, and then we're going to go into a car that is very suitable to carrying a lot of durians.
Exactly. Mm.
First, some news updates. Car prices. Last week, we mentioned that they will come down, somewhat relatable to pre-SST or SST holiday days. So yeah, they did come down as expected. A couple of thousand here for the Protons and the Prodos, and up to 20,000 for the Mercedes-Benzes. The other thing is, during this RMCO, the government finally announced that the JPJ counters will now be open for the weekend, which is good news for me, because I just found out my license expires tomorrow.
Oh.
But they also did say, if your license expired past March, you know, there is a bit of a grace period for you to be able to renew that. So get it renewed as soon as possible. Just don't leave it too long.
Get yourselves out there and get it done.
Let's talk about cars, finally. There have been quite a few car launches. More specifically, the BMW X545e. That just launched today.
Yeah, this was this afternoon.
Basically, the new version of the old X540e. But this time, it comes with a bigger 3-liter inline-six engine and a more powerful electric motor. So this kind of paints the picture of a no-compromise plug-in hybrid that you can do anything with it. It's still fast enough. It's huge enough for your family. And it's aimed directly at Volvo, even though it costs 440,000 ringgit, which is 50,000 ringgit more than Volvo.
Yeah.
I'm kind of excited to test drive this. Yeah. Are you, Daniel?
To be very honest, I'm not very excited, because the only real difference is, okay, yes, it's got a bit more power, it's got a better battery system, it's got a longer electric-only range. But when I look at the price of 440,000, my excitement has downed, you know, gone down a little bit, because the previous model was 390,000. And I'm thinking, okay, 50,000 ringgit more is a lot of money in this climate in any country, you see? Mm. And on top of that, you got the Volvo XC90, which is almost 70,000 ringgit cheaper. And it's in the same class, same range. And the Volvo is a 7-seater, and this is not. Yes, the Volvo all-electric range is not as good as this, but I tend to think, you know, when someone is paying 400 over 1,000 ringgit, of course, they're getting a beautiful car, full of luxury, great features, new infotainment system, and everything else. But are they really bothered about saving fuel? No, because it still has a 3-liter petrol engine.
Let me drop some facts for a change.
Okay.
Estimated traveling distance, 77 kilometers on pure electric.
Yes.
And then 600 newton meters of torque.
Lots of power.
That's crazy. Yeah. Crazy.
I felt good saying that, because that's probably the first time that I've been dropping some stats here on the show.
And those are good stats.
And those are good stats.
Yeah, well chosen, Richard.
Thank you.
Even though the Volvo does seem like the better package in almost every matter, I would say. I mean, it's better equipped. The BMW still doesn't come with adaptive cruise control, which, you know, for over 440,000 ringgit. Yeah, I mean, you expect that to be standard, right?
Right.
But I'm quite curious to drive this car because I've compared the Volvo XC60 and the X3, and you really do felt that difference when you're driving it, when you're really rolling around in it and taking it across country.
Right.
Mm. Somehow the BMW felt a bit more refined, but you know, the XC90 is already a super good car. How good can this X5 be? That would be the question. Mm.
Well, we'll have to wait and see that.
Yep. The next two cars, actually, is the Nissan Almera and the Honda City Turbo, both of which are apparently coming soon, Daniel.
Yes, both are coming very, very soon. If you go to dsf.my, we've actually done a very simple comparo of both vehicles based on their Thailand specs, because both cars have been launched in Thailand, but they have not been shown here yet. They're doing some testing on the road. People have got sneak peeks of them, some spy shots and everything else. The new Almera looks very, very different than the old one. The new City doesn't look all that much different, but if you put them side by side, then you'll notice all the differences. Mm. It's more like nip and tuck on the design language. But if you get into the specs of the car, in terms of dimensions, the Honda City now has grown to be slightly longer, slightly wider, slightly taller than the Almera. Before, the Almera was bigger.
Yeah.
But now with this new Almera, the City has grown in size. When you talk about the engine performance, both are using very good new turbocharged engines, 1 liter only.
Wow.
So, tiny engines.
Yeah, tiny engines, but with decent power. So in terms of power delivery, should not be a problem. But the debate that has been happening a lot on social media is it possible to climb Genting Highlands?
That seems to be an ongoing argument and has been around for decades.
Yes. So,
yeah.
You know, when people talk about a 1 liter engine and a family sedan, straight away they think, oh, if it's fully loaded, can I go up Genting Highlands? The answer is yes, you can go up Genting Highlands and you can go up with some sensible speed, because with the Honda City, you have 173 Newton meters of torque, which is a lot of mid-range torque. With the Nissan Almera, slightly less at 152, which you can still go up Genting quite comfortably. The only problem is, now both these cars, because they're not in Malaysia yet officially, we've not test driven them, we don't know how they perform and everything else. But based on what we've been reading in Thailand and talking to a couple of Thai journalists that we know, they are actually torn between the two cars. Some say they prefer the Almera, some say they prefer the City. So I think for the first time, Nissan is going to have a solid fight with Honda for this segment. But the sad news is, where will Toyota Vios be?
Yes. The Nissan definitely gives a new dimension, per se, to this segment. Yes. Because the Honda City and the Toyota Vios, like you said just now, they really haven't changed. They've made updates to the same template. The interior looks pretty much the same. The exterior, maybe new lights here and there. But the Almera on the inside, it could easily be mistaken for a 180,000 ringgit Kia. I think the fact that the Nissan Almera just seems like newer competitor into the segment, I think people should buy into that immediately.
Mm. Also, because Nissan, I mean, Tan Chong in Malaysia, who handles Nissan, they really need this car, because at the moment, the current Almera is 8 years old. It's really aged. The price is very low. It's 60,000 for the Almera, which is slightly more than a Perdua Myvi, and still it doesn't sell that well because it's an old vehicle.
What are we expecting these prices to be?
Well, if they launch it during this special sales tax promo, I'm guessing about 70-odd for both cars, which is where the Toyota Vios sits. Nothing wrong with the Vios. Of course, they came out earlier, but the Vios does not have a new generation engine. The traditional buyer will say, no, I'll still go for the Vios because I like the fact that it's got a traditional engine, no headache, reliability is there, after sales, everything is there. Whereas with a traditional buyer, he'll look at the Pulsar and say, look at the Almera, and say, hey, you know, new engine, new technology, turbocharger. The last time Nissan had a turbocharged engine in this capacity was with the Nissan March about 30 years ago. And, you know, the last time Hyundai had a small 1 liter engine turbocharged was with the Honda City 2, also about 30 years ago.
Huh.
Yeah.
This is kind of like they're coming back to fight each other.
Exactly. So, you know, it'll be an interesting battle to watch in the coming
bit of a return to form, so to speak.
Yes.
For global launches, there has been quite a few cars, one of which is probably the best looking sports saloon that's gonna arrive in 2021, and it's the brand new Lexus IS. They haven't revealed a lot of the details yet, but we'll probably be getting the IS300, which has a 2-liter four-cylinder engine, 241 horsepower, right around the BMWs and the Mercedes and all of them. But the interesting thing about this is that Lexus has been boasting about all the suspension and handling improvements. They've been throwing out words like lower center of gravity and stiffened suspension and independent suspension and all those words. So this does look like a really, really exciting car, and I feel like maybe it will have that pedigree as well to go along with it.
I like the look of it, and that's as far as it goes. I like the kind of rear end of it. I think it's really nice. It's very refined. There's quite some nice angles on it. But looking at the door panels, it almost looks like somebody has hit it from the side and it's crumpled a little bit because of how the angles are formed, you know?
There's a lot of form in the design.
Yeah, I mean, it's a great-looking thing. First glance, it just looks like, you know, somebody's kind of printed it out on paper, crumpled it up, and then reopened it again.
Correct.
Does that make sense?
A lot of creases. Yeah, that's what it's
a lot of creases, yeah.
Yeah, definitely. That style these days, right? I think it makes the car stand out really, really well. I wouldn't mind getting one.
Of course. Right.
The other car that was launched was the Nissan X-Trail or the Nissan Rogue in other markets. It's got a fantastic looking interior and a confused exterior. They say this one is a little bit shorter, a little bit less tall, I guess, and looks a bit more athletic. But the best thing about this is, you know, along with what we said about the Nissan Almera, this one's got a really, really nice interior as well.
Next bit of news actually was launched yesterday. It's an all-new pickup truck from Mazda. This is the new BT50. Now, previously, Mazda did a joint venture with Ford for pickup trucks. That means they didn't develop their own model. What they did was they said, okay, we'll talk to Ford. We'll just do the exterior and the interior, but everything else will come from Ford. So the previous BT50 was always basically a Ford Ranger with a Mazda look and feel.
But what is it now, Daniel?
This time around, Mazda has divorced Ford from the pickup truck segment, and they've gotten married to Isuzu for the D-Max.
That's a really, really good base there, because the D-Max
it's a workhorse.
Never breaks.
Yes. So what you're going to see now is Mazda BT50 looking like any one of the new Mazda SUVs. If you look at the picture on DSF, you can see they look exactly like a CX-8 combination of a CX-9 in terms of the front and side view. And then, of course, at the back, you have a pickup truck body. But underneath is all going to be the latest Isuzu D-Max. And I must point out, the Isuzu D-Max that we're talking about is not the one sold in Malaysia, but the one that was released in Thailand recently, which comes with a very car-like cabin.
And I think we covered this a long time ago, a very, very advanced diesel engine as well.
Correct. So this BT50, Japan has just launched it in Australia. Yesterday they said Australia will be the first country to get it, followed by Thailand. But Malaysia will take some time because of the high-tech engine. They need high-quality diesel. We'll have to wait and see when it arrives in Malaysia.
Yep.
What do we want to do about this Pajero then, guys?
Okay, Mitsubishi Pajero. Everyone knows this. I think there was a time in Malaysia when you talk to any guy who wants to buy a four-wheel drive, he won't mention the brand. He'll just mention the word, I want to buy a Pajero. He might be looking to buy a Toyota Land Cruiser or some other brand, but the term Pajero was always used to qualify I'm buying a 4x4 that looks like a Mitsubishi. Because this SUV was so popular, everybody wanted one. And it became more popular when our local police force and JPJ started using them. So after the end of the Land Rover Defender era, Malaysia decided that all their workhorses will be a Mitsubishi Pajero. And it was the L047. It looked very rugged. It was not the most comfortable, but it was more comfortable than a Land Rover Defender. It had a beautiful aircon system, much comfortable seats than the Land Rover Defender, and it was ultra reliable for daily use. Now, L047 sold so many because why? Farmers bought it, logging camps bought it, everybody bought it because at that time, pickup trucks were really, really classic and sturdy and difficult to live with. So the next alternative, if you're going into one of these 4x4 tracks or logging camps and all that, was to get a Pajero L047. So it became so popular. At that time, there was no Mitsubishi Malaysia. It was sold by a company called USF. And USF sold so many, I think they made a ton of money doing it. Parts are cheap. It's reliable. You can go anywhere in Malaysia, you'll find someone who can fix your Pajero.
They're called something different in the UK. The Shogun. They called it.
You're right. It's called the Shogun in the UK, yes.
I don't think they'd be called Pajero in any of the Spanish-speaking countries either, would they?
Yes, because it means something else in Spanish.
It means something completely different, yes. And for those of you who might not know what it means, this is a show for all the family, so we suggest that you Google it in your own time.
Yeah, that's why I didn't say anything.
Just to add on that fact, in the Spanish markets and in US, it was called the Mitsubishi Montero.
Oh, was
you're
it?
Right. You're right, yes. Yeah.
If you Google the Mitsubishi Pajero, you won't get a lot of results. But if you Google the Mitsubishi Montero or Shogun, it seems everybody's looking for one.
Mm.
Like you said, Daniel, this generation of Pajero was used a lot by the police force, right?
Yes.
I vividly remember seeing a few of these back when I was a lot smaller, watching Garat Has and all that stuff, where you know these Mitsubishi Pajeros would turn up. And, you know, it wasn't like a Land Rover Discovery. It didn't seem to be posh or just roll up and down hills and all that stuff. It wasn't like a Toyota Land Cruiser where the UN uses it and is known to be undefeatable and super serious all the time.
Correct.
The Nissan Patrol, a lot of baddies use the Nissan Patrol. The Mitsubishi Pajero was kind of like an enthusiast off-roader.
True.
That can do a lot of things. It was comfortable. There's a lot to talk about behind Mitsubishi's motorsports pedigrees, especially at the heights of their rally racing back in the 70s. And they were so, you know, sold on taking over this rally racing legacy that they wanted to go to Paris-Dakar rally, which basically racing through the whole of Africa, that's over thousands and thousands of kilometers. And they put a 275 horsepower V6 engine into a Pajero and called it the Pajero Evolution. And in its first year, it won with a 1-2-3 finish. That's how good Mitsubishi was, and that's how apparently good this Pajero was. This car was just robust.
Right. Hey, I remember that evolution. It kind of looked like a Pokemon. The wings at the back, that's the one, right?
You are right, Richard.
Like, the wings one with the
fins. Wings at the front, flared arches, bonnet,
that's the one,
school,
yes.
Everything, yeah. Yes. And it was made popular by Mr. Jackie Chan in his movie.
Right.
Do you remember what movie it was called?
I can't remember the movie name, but actually it was not just one movie, a couple of movies, they had the Pajero Evolution running in it.
Wow.
Who am I? Who am I? It was in?
Who am I?
Jackie Chan, movie. Who am I?
You Googled it.
Of course I did.
Oh, just before we head off to the break, there's another interesting fact here that I don't think we've mentioned yet. This generation of Pajero was first launched in 1991.
Right.
And it's apparently still being produced today.
Where?
In China. And it's being called the Leopard Q6.
The what?
It looks exactly the same. And in fact, this car was so popular that it was produced in India until 2012. And the Chinese makes, most of them had a variation of this Mitsubishi Pajero until 2014. So, I mean, this car really went around the world.
Just to add a little bit, a lot of Mitsubishis actually ended up in China rebadged over the years.
Ah, okay. Got it. So it's by the company Leopard then, is it?
Yes.
Right. Okay. Well, there you go. I've learned something today. Time for a break, I think. Of course, you are listening to Cruise Control, the car show here on BFM, with me, Rich Bradbury, Arif Ruse, and Daniel Fernandez from DSF.my. We've had some news, a couple of car launches, and a bit of a review of the Mitsubishi Pajero. After the break, though, we'll be looking at some things that you should be looking for if you want to be buying yourself a second-hand Mitsubishi Pajero. Don't go anywhere. This is Cruise Control here on BFM 89.9.
Because freedom matters. BFM 89.9.
BFM 89.9, the business station. I'm Rich Bradbury. I'm on the phone line with Daniel Fernandez from DSF.my. Say hello, Daniel.
Hello, listeners and gentlemen.
And of course, the other person hanging by a thread is Mr. Arif Ruse. Say hello, Arif.
Hello, everybody, and I'm always hanging by a thread.
If you're only just joining us, we've had some car news, we've had some launches, both local and global. We spoke about the Mitsubishi Pajero and how it doesn't seem to be going away anytime soon. Still being produced in China, from what I understand, under the name of the Leopard Q6. Q6.
Yeah.
The Leopard Q6. That's Leopard with two A's, by the way. Anyway, for those of you that have always wanted one of these, whether it's a Pajero, a Shogun, or what was the other one? The
Montero.
Montero. You know, if we were to go to a car yard and want to pick up a second-hand one of these, what should we be looking out for, fellas?
Okay, to start with, because so many were sold to the police department, the road transport department, our local JPJ, and also some other government departments did take on the Pajero, Jabaran Parit and Saliran and all this. So a lot of them now, because, you know, of age, they've turned up in the used car market, they've gone through multiple owners, some of them have changed the reg card not to show the first owner, which was the government of Malaysia. Now, buying an ex-Malaysian government vehicle or any government vehicle is not really a bad thing, but it must be noted that, you know, these cars were not exactly loved by their owners because the owner was an entity, it wasn't one person looking after the car.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Physical maintenance would have been done because government vehicles are always maintained and they got a contractor. But I'm talking about, you know, when it goes off-road, accident damage, people eating in the car. Sometimes they pick up, you know, dead animals and put in the car to move them off the street. Because at that time, there were not many pickup trucks running around for the government departments to own. So the Pajero became a vehicle for everything. And this is something which, you know, yes, you can clean it up, you can do a lot of things, you can refurbish it, but it's something which, you know, you'll stick at the back of your head. Was this car used to carry a dead body, you know? Or was this car used in a shootout, you know, and things like that. So I always tell people, if you're going for the first batch LO47, if you're going to pay something under 10,000, because today's worth about $5,000, $6,000, $7,000, $8,000, don't have your expectations too high. You're buying something which has been taken to the jungle and back. And if you're using it for the same purpose, fine. But if you want something that's going to be family-friendly, because why? It is a 7-seater. The third row seat is actually a fold-up seat. It's not the most comfortable, but, you know, short journeys is fine. Why don't you go for the next generation model, which is a little bit more refined. It's got two-tone paint job. This one was sold to a lot of families. Also, to a lot of business owners, he used it as a business vehicle because at that time, this was not a cheap vehicle to buy. It was, you know, something that cost slightly more than an average sedan. So if you can find, say, a 1996, I'm still keeping the price down below 20,000, a 1996 Mitsubishi Pajero 2.8 diesel if you want, or the petrol, it's up to you. They've got a 2.5 and a 2.8. Now, I would rather go for the diesel because Mitsubishi diesels just keep going and going and going. Now, the 2.5 petrol, not a bad engine, but that high-mileage engines will cost money to repair and do wear and tear maintenance. And most of these vehicles, you know, if you get a family vehicle like this, it's great, you know, to go and look for your durian and your rambutan in the kampung, you know, go for your fishing, you know, your odd fishing trip with your buddies, or, you know, take the kids to a waterfall. It's great because it's four-wheel drive, it's a 7-seater, it's rugged, it's a workhorse, it'll probably not fail you as long as you keep it going. So if you get something like that, which is 1996, 1997, 1998, prices are below 20,000 ringgit, which is, I think, great value. And you can also find some who have never been off-road, just owners who have driven it on the highway and on the road and everything else, for the same price. So how do you spot these cars? I'm going to teach you now.
I'm going to say that's why you're here.
Yeah, oh, thank you. Now, with any four-wheel drive, it is easy to go into the jungle, come back out, take it to the best car wash in town, even do an undercarriage wash, and then pretend that the car never went off-road, right? But if you go off-road, you will definitely damage the underneath of the car at some point. So if you're going to buy a used Pajero or any four-wheel drive, the first thing you do is you take it and put it on a lift and look underneath. If you see dents, scrapes, all kinds of things, which you also see on passenger cars because people don't know how to drive when they go past bumps and everything else on the road.
Yeah.
But you'll see it more on a four-wheel drive because a four-wheel drive has a high road clearance. So it shouldn't be scraping on speed bumps and potholes and manhole covers.
It should be scraping on rocks.
Exactly. So if you see all kinds of dents and scrapes and all underneath, you know this vehicle has been off-road. Number two, get into the rear passenger seat. Take off the little plastic cladding without cracking or breaking it. You know, maybe you can use edge of a slight screwdriver. Don't force it because old cars, they'll crack. Just remove it a little bit, enough to pull the carpet aside and see if there's any grime or rust underneath.
Mm-hmm.
Because No car wash will remove the carpet to clean the grime. So that's the second way of spotting. The third way of spotting is, if you can take the trouble to also use the same screwdriver and open the rear door panel. Now, why I keep saying rear door panels and rear carpet is because generally, when people want to sell a car and hide a lot of things, they do it all for the driver's side. Because why? The person is coming to buy, the first thing they'll do is get into the driver's seat. Mm-hmm. They never go to the back.
Yeah.
So if they're going to do any cover-up, they'll probably leave the carpet in front and vacuum and clean it and the door panel and everything else. But in the rear seat door panel, when you open it, see if there's grime, sand, or you know, basically residue from off-road activity inside the well of the door.
And it's especially important because cars of this age, they're bound to have some leaks from all the seals that have come across. And then the use of steel and aluminium has come a long way since back then. They might not be as well rust protected as they are
now. Exactly. I know. And most of them will probably have 3 or 4 coats of paint. So by removing that carpet and removing the door panel, you can also see what was the original cover, because nobody's going to spend 8, 9, 10, 12,000 ringgit to do a full ground-up restoration on a vehicle like this and then sell it for less than 20,000 ringgit.
Yeah, it doesn't make sense, of course.
Yeah. So this is what you can do if you're looking for a Pajero. There's still a lot of good examples out there. I've actually spotted one on one of the classifieds and it was just below 20,000 and it's never been off-road. So you can find them.
There's actually quite a lot of things that came along with this Pajero. I mean, in terms of specifications, and if you just try and think of back in the 90s, I really think that Japanese cars, they never could go wrong. They never built a bad Japanese car in the 90s and the early 2000s.
Very true.
And I mean, if you look at the pictures of this interior and the technology that came with the Pajero, even as standard compared to a Land Rover Discovery or even an early BMW X5, I mean, this Pajero, if you got the right one, you could get stuff like multi-mode ABS, which you can adjust how intrusive you want the ABS to be. You even got electronic dampers, which you can put soft, medium, and hard.
Right.
I mean, those things we'd see in cars today.
Correct.
The new BMW X5 has those things.
It was like an executive car in a 4x4 almost, you know, in the way that it looks as well inside the consoles and stuff. And you can look at like the kind of wood paneling that you would get in some of them. You know, and this is something that you're aiming to, like you say, Daniel, to wander around in the fields and up and down on 4x4ing and not necessarily have that wonderful wood paneling.
Yes, and the sad thing is, today, Mitsubishi is not doing very well globally.
It's sad
because, you know, they had the technology, they had the know-how, but somewhere along the line, someone in management in Japan just didn't get it right.
I feel like we should do a story on Mitsubishi and like why they started suddenly selling their cars out to everybody. Because, I mean, they gave us a lot of Proton cars.
Right.
They gave China a lot of cars.
Right.
They gave, I believe, General Motors a lot of cars as well. So, I mean, that's the story for another time. Yeah. But this Pajero, I don't think we should underestimate how well it was built.
Correct.
If you've sat in a Perdana or one of the first few Wiras, you know how all of those panels are quite soft touch?
Yes.
They're plasticky, almost rubbery. It appears that way inside the Pajero as well, and I never could scratch it or anything, so it will last forever. Mm. And even if you were to go off-road, guess what? Every Pajero, even the cheapest ones, came with an altitude meter and a globe compass in the center console. So, I mean, this car was made to do everything, really.
But even if it didn't, it made you feel like you were that person who might go off-road at some point. I have an altimeter. I have a compass. I could get lost and still find my way home.
Yeah. I used to dream of going off-roading and all that stuff. And I used to think to myself, like, what car, you know, what 4x4 should I get? And I always thought Toyota Land Cruiser. But if you look at the classifieds right now, probably the cheapest good running Land Cruiser will set you back like 35, 40,000 ringgit.
You're right. And the Pajero is half the price.
And you're not losing anything because of that. I mean, in terms of like maintenance and all that stuff, a lot of the engines were shared across a lot of Mitsubishi models as well. So I don't think parts should be a problem.
Parts is
right,
not a problem because there were so many sold and so many are still surviving. And you must understand, these are also sold well in Thailand. So parts across the border, still plenty. So you'll never have problem with parts. Even body panels, windscreen, everything you can get, no problem.
Okay, I have one last question for you guys.
Okay.
Now that you've seen this, I've listed down three other competitions.
Right.
One of them is the Series 1 Land Rover Discovery, which should cost about the same. I think they're about 25 or 30 thousand ringgit right now. Then there's the Toyota Land Cruiser, which 30 to 40K, and Nissan Patrol, which is super rare here. But which would you guys go for? I mean, the Pajero seems like the obvious choice, isn't it?
It may be the obvious choice because of price, but in terms of resale value, because at some point you want to sell it, you have to go for the Land Cruiser.
Land Cruiser wins out all the time, I guess. What about you, Richard?
I would go for the Discovery simply because I've always wanted one.
nothing to do with you being from England, eh?
Nothing to do with that at all. Maybe a little bit. But, you know, even going to school, you know, I'd see like some of the teachers and the rich parents turning up in their Discovery. And it was that kind of aspirational thing for me, you know.
True.
We didn't get many Japanese cars until quite late on. And so, you know, Land Rovers were the thing that I would see regularly. Those and Mark 1 Ford Escorts all over the place. And so the Discovery was like, oh, that's what I want when I get older. Yeah. And there you go.
Yeah.
Should we wrap up the show then?
Yes, I think we should.
Ladies and gentlemen, you have heard us waxing lyrically all about the Mitsubishi Pajero just there. Should you want to get your hands on a second-hand one, of course, listen back to the show. Listen to some of the pointers that Daniel has thrown out there. Expect to pay roughly how much was it, Daniel?
Between 13 to 18,000 ringgit for a decent unit with some service history.
There you go. And at the beginning of the show, of course, we had some news about car prices, how they came down as expected. The RMCO, of course, JPJ counters now open over the weekend and everybody rejoiced. And then car launches, the BMW X5, the Nissan Almera and the Honda City Turbo. Locally, globally, a Lexus, a Nissan and a Mazda. If you missed any part of the show, download the podcast where you normally download it from or head over to the website. It's bfm.my. There you go. This has been Cruise Control. I've been Rich Bradbury. Over there on the phones has been
Ari Bruce
and Daniel Fernandez.
Tune in same time, same place next week here on BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.